And now,
proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
For those of you just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are once again tuned in to Civic Cypher.
A lot more for you to stick around for. Back to talking about what's the name now? You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, sadly I do.
Mr. Ron DeSantis. We're going to be talking about Bill 1999, Florida State House bill that is problematic.
That's a way to put it.
Yeah, we're going to definitely talk about that. And then it occurred to me that Kalief Browder was a person that we needed to talk about on the show. So we're going to spend some time talking about him. Please brace for impact, because that is a heavy story with an advanced trigger warning for you. But first and foremost, let us discuss BABA, Becoming a Better Ally, BABA. So today's BABA is sponsored by Major Threads, for the finest in men's sportswear. Check majorthreads.com. And today, we'll be reading from the New York Times. As you know, those of you who listen to the show, you may have heard the name Brian Stevenson. We're big fans of Brian Stevenson around here. He is a lawyer and a great orator and a person who really inspires us. He's also the director for the National Memorial for Peace and Justice and the leader of the Equal Justice Initiative. So I'll read. Montgomery, Alabama. The National Memorial for Peace and Justice, on a 6-acre site overlooking the Alabama State Capitol, is dedicated to the victims of American white supremacy, and it demands a reckoning with one of the nation's least recognized atrocities, the lynching of thousands of black people in a decades-long campaign of racist terror. At the center is a grim cloister, a walkway with 800 weathered steel columns all hanging from a roof. Etched on each column is the name of an American county and the people who were lynched there. Most listed by name, many simply as unknown. The columns meet you first at eye level, like the headstones that lynching victims were rarely given. But as you walk, the floor steadily descends. By the end, the columns are all dangling above, leaving you in the position of the callous spectators in the old photographs of public lynchings. There's nothing like it in the country, which is the point. They have cataloged nearly 4,400 in total lynchings. Quote, just seeing the names of all these people, said Brian Stevenson, the founder of the Equal Justice Initiative, the nonprofit organization behind the memorial. Many of them, he said, quote, have never been named in public. We want you to check out museumandmemorial.eji.org, learn about that, and become a better ally. All right. Florida State House Bill 999. So, as you know, and as we've discussed on the show, it's some people out there that they don't want us to know about history. And
well, that's where it starts.
That's where it starts. And before we actually get into this, I think we got a clip to play, right? Let's fire that one up.
Hi, Grace. I am Grace Lynn. I am 100 years young. I'm here to protest our school's district book banning policy. My husband, Robert Nickel, was killed in action in World War II. At a very young age, he was only 26, defending our democracy, constitution, and freedoms. One of the freedoms that the Nazis crushed was the freedom to read the books they banned. They stopped the free press, banned and burned books. The freedom to read, which is protected by the First Amendment, is our essential right and duty of our democracy. Even so, it is continually under attack by both the public and private groups who think they hold the truth. In response to the book banning throughout our country and Martin County, last year, during the time I was 99, I have created this quilt. To remind all of us that these few of so many more books that are banned or targeted need to be proudly displayed and protected. And read if you choose to. The quilt was shown on national TV as part of Ali Velshi's Banned Book Club segment. Banned books and burning books are the same. Both are done for the same reason. Fear of knowledge. Fear is not freedom. Fear is not liberty. Fear is control. My husband died as a father of freedom. I am a mother of liberty. Banned books need to be proudly displayed and protected from school boards like this. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. So, yeah. Book bannings. You heard it straight from the horse's mouth. A person 100 years old that lived through book bannings that we were made aware of in this country, taking place in Nazi Germany. Take control over the children and their minds. Do not have them think beyond these borders. It'll be easier to indoctrinate them if they only have one perspective rather than multiple perspectives. We've long since known that conservatives in this country their numbers are weakened as a result of higher education. In other words, the more educated you become, the more liberal a philosophy you adopt, the more liberal your voting tends to be. You tend to see the world with more empathy and more understanding because you've expanded your cognitive boundaries and you recognize that certain things are possible. There's less to be afraid of. We have more in common, etc. You do not notice folks who have a liberal philosophy trying to hide education.
And I don't know if that's, excuse me, people that are more educated or people that are more enlightened, right? Because Governor DeSantis has a degree from Harvard Law School. Mm-hmm. So very educated, still hyper right-wing conservative, still very, very selfish and bigoted and racist. Mm. So
that's a good point.
Not just the idea of more education by way of school, but more enlightened people tend to be mm-hmm. more caring, more empathetic, more inclusive. Yeah.
And that's a good point, because education does not completely eradicate conservatism. There are people who are just conservatives, and that is the way that they see the world, and that's okay. Unfortunately.
I mean, not really.
I'm just being
right,
funny.
Conservative,
I'm being funny.
Conservative throughout history has meant many different things.
Yeah, it's not.
I don't even like to call present day Republicans conservative.
Yeah.
I think it's too light a term. It's too benign and too vague.
Yeah.
Our current right wing extreme GOP
is
the new MAGA country.
Enemy.
Those are different people, man.
I'm just being funny. As you know, and as many of our listeners, I'm like kind of bleeding heart liberal with mine. And a lot of times, the conservative folks that I engage with tend to look at that like that's a weakness of some sort. And I have a real problem with that because I believe it's a superpower.
Yeah, they've been taught that you use the word indoctrinated. There's a reason why.
Yeah, well, read as many books as I have and then talk to me. Anyway, back to the books, funnily enough. So this is kind of where we are, right? There are people that do become educated and they just have conservative beliefs. And again, that is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. However, overwhelmingly, folks that tend to be more educated tend to find themselves with more liberal beliefs and tend to vote more more liberal.
Maybe think more liberal. I don't know if they vote more liberal.
Well, this is what I've been exposed to. You know, that's so maybe overwhelming is not the right word, but there definitely tends to be a bias.
Because I think there's a bunch of very educated people that feel differently even than they vote. Because of personal best interest, because of fiscal outcomes, and a bunch of other reasons.
Perhaps.
Once upon a time, anyway. Today, it's a lot more straightforward something else.
Well, here's what I'll do. I will recheck that because I would not speak with such authority on that particular matter if I had not read it from what I believe to be a credible source. Mm-hmm. So I'll double check that. But for now, what I'm saying is based on the premise that education tends to yield more liberal voters, more liberal people, indeed.
And I'm not challenging both parts of that. I think it does yield more liberal people. You use the word voters.
Well, this is the reason why the GOP would be concerned about that and adopt these really hard-nosed postures mm-hmm. with respect to education. So with that in mind, I'm reading from CBS News. Florida State House Bill 999 was advanced this week. And the bill would ban state colleges and universities from using funds to, I'll read the quote here. It says, quote, promote, support, or maintain any programs or campus activities that espouse diversity, equity, or inclusion, or critical race theory rhetoric. This means your Mecha, your Black Student Union, your Asian American Students Club,
your National Panhellenic Fraternities and Sororities.
There you go. The bill would also give the state's Board of Governors the ability to remove, quote, any major or minor that is based on or otherwise utilizes pedagogical, just a new word for me, methodology associated with critical theory. The bill HB 999 was passed by the House on Monday, and the Florida State Senate must now pass its version of the bill SB 266 before it is able to head to Florida Governor Ron DeSantis's desk. Okay. Opponents of the bill worry that its language is too vague and could be used to ban activities promoted by multicultural student unions, Black fraternities and sororities, and courses in Jewish history, women's studies, and LGBTQ plus studies. An official analysis of the bill cited examples of current courses that would be banned under the proposed legislation, including Florida Atlantic University's Gender and Climate Change and Florida University's Social Inequities, Social Construction of Difference Inequities. Okay. Now, it actually goes further than this, because this bill allows the governor effectively to create a panel of deciders who get to decide on tenured teachers whether or not they'll continue to be able to teach. Right. If they have a problematic history of teachings on, you know, right on the edge of that line or.
And problematic is an interesting word to use.
Right. And it's
in this context, it just means teaching diversity, inclusion.
Right.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Like,
what are our strengths? How do we best get along with each other?
Oh, wow.
What are our values? What perspective can we bring? What can we learn from each other? These sorts of things. Well, basically, this gives ultimately all authority to Ron DeSantis, the governor of the state of Florida. This man wants to be president, by the way. So he gets
this to man will run for president, by the way.
He gets to decide who the deciders are. And of course, as you know, if you decide, if you're the one deciding who the deciders are, you're effectively the decider, right? And then they get to decide if you can teach. Carte blanche.
And this isn't people who want to be teachers.
These are all tenured
teachers.
Exactly. And here's another piece that is interesting. This comes directly from the language, the Senate bill language. They want to focus their historical studies on Western European studies and civilizations. In other words, you want to say it for me?
No, I don't, because I'm.
So I'll say it. White people. In other words, they are centering the history of white people at the expense of everybody who was not born white. Now, does that sound like, hey, this is a white country? Does that sound like, hey, this is America, speak English? Now that you've lost your, you know, German language and your Irish, you know, history and, you know, all the immigrants that came. Doesn't that sound like white supremacy? The reason it sounds like it, because I know it does, is because it is, right? The thing is, crafted in this language and under the guise of protecting children from feeling ashamed about themselves, these folks can get away with this. Not to mention that this is a playbook straight out of Nazi Germany. And they're not the only ones to do it, but we see oppressive regimes, ethnostates, people that really try to prop up one facet of their citizenship and make all the other second class citizens to kind of serve that elite base. This is exactly the playbook. And it might sound good to people who are susceptible to fear mongering. But the fact is that looking at it for what it is, it is very hurtful. And it's very obvious. And because this man has that level of authority in that state, and, you know, he has the support of, you know, I believe it's both houses in his state, the Senate and the House of Representatives in the state of Florida. They're both primarily conservative, or have a conservative majority. This will actually be the law, crafted as is, and everybody who's not white suffers, whether you know it or not.
Some white people will suffer too.
Yeah.
And they do know it. They just...
You know, when I went to Africa, I went to Egypt, which is in Africa. And I saw exactly how much history is there and how far back it goes. You know, this country is 400 some years old. They have so much stuff there. And 400 years ago, they're like, this is the baby stuff. We got stuff that's 4,000 years old. We got stuff that's 40,000 years old. Like, that's, you know. So I learned about all this stuff here and none of this stuff there. And when I got there, I realized, man, I'm at a loss. I'm learning things that I didn't know. I'm realizing the genius of these people, you know, and it's not just there. I've been to France, been to Switzerland, I've been a lot of places around the world. You know, we both have. And the history is so deep, but we, and you might know this about us. We in the United States, we're so focused on us that it's kind of like rude. We're kind of a self-centered country.
Arrogance is the word you're looking
arrogant,
for.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that it's ultimately, it is to our own detriment. We live in this small little piece of the world where everything is, we think everything is safe. We're afraid to travel. pray to expand our boundaries. And there's a lot of people happy to just allow us to live our lives in a very small way, insignificant way. Because again, the more we know, the more we expand our boundaries, the more we understand that we're all basically the same. When I was in Southeast Asia for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, bouncing around from Singapore to Malaysia to Vietnam to Hong Kong to all of them, you know, Indonesia, I learned something that seemed very simple, but it was very profound for me. Every time I ended up on a new piece of dirt, I saw people there who were using what grew out of the ground to put some food together or make some money so that they could feed their babies because they love their children. And I'm like, man, if that ain't the most human thing that I've ever seen, and here I am on the other side of the world, it's dark, it's night, it's 4 a.m. where I live. Over here, the sun is shining, these people is working, happy, laughing, listening to music, dancing, kissing each other, loving each other, deserving of whatever life could hold for them. They don't live under the stars and stripes. Ain't no guns in the country. You know what I'm saying? Happy as they want to be. They go up, hike a mountain, drop off a little bit of incense at a Buddha, say a prayer for their, you know, passed away loved ones, hike back down the mountain, keep it pushing. That grew me up a lot, seeing that. Beautiful. And the sad part about it is most of the people that I know in the United States never will have that eye-opening moment where they like get to see that and recognize like, yo, these people are just like me. So it was so much easier to see like these are my brothers and my sisters over here doing their thing. I'm happy to support. I know what that's like. If you're up here crying and praying because you have a sick grandmother, I know what that's like. My grandma was sick too. You love your grandma too? You doing your best for her? I respect you. I know what that, I've been there. You know what I'm saying? And now we don't speak the same language, but.
Yeah, we, the kind of curse of having traveled the world is learning exactly what you just said. And this is very, very common information. We're not breaking new ground here. We have far more in common with our brothers and sisters in the human race all over this planet than the things that divide us. There's just so many people that stand to benefit and profit, or actually not even so many people. There are just powerful people that profit and benefit from the things that divide us, that they spend a lot of resources making sure they highlight those things and keep us from uniting, because the haves love that there are so many have-nots. It gives them a much bigger pie to split between each other.
It's heavy. Well, the best I can say is stay woke. You know, stop being afraid. Know what it is that we're dealing with. You know, like everything that you're likely afraid of, somebody wants you to be afraid of it. Now that's not to say that that's a conservative thing or a liberal thing. That's just a thing, but there's far less to be afraid of than you may know. And education is the last thing anybody should be afraid of. So yeah, stay woke. And if this dude does run for president, which, you know, it's pretty much a sure thing, do everything that you can to keep this man from getting power, because we've seen what he'll do. All right, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. And today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. And I will be reading from Wikipedia. In other words, you can check this out for yourself. There is mention of suicide in this story. And so, fair warning. So I will read. Khalif Browder was born May 25th, 1993. And he lived until June 6th, 2015. He was an African-American youth from Bronx, New York. was held at the Rikers Island Jail Complex without trial between 2010 and 2013 for allegedly stealing a backpack containing valuables. During his imprisonment, Browder was in solitary confinement for 700 days. I also need to let you know that if you do want to read this or read along, I'm skipping around, just had to condense it a bit here for the show. All right. On May 15, 2010, police apprehended Browder and a friend on Arthur Avenue near East 186th Street in the Belmont section of the Bronx. Browder said he was going home from a party. He thought the police were carrying out a routine stop and frisk, a police procedure he had undergone on a number of occasions. Police officers were responding to a 911 call placed by Roberto Bautista about the theft of a backpack containing a camera, $700, a credit card, and an iPod Touch. Bautista said, two male black guys, they took my brother's book bag. Browder told the attending police officers, I didn't rob anyone, you can check my pockets. The police searched Browder, but they did not find the backpack. 17 hours after the arrest, Browder was interrogated by a police officer and a prosecutor. The following day, Browder was charged with robbery, grand larceny, and assault. Because he was on probation, Browder was not released. At his arraignment, he was charged with second-degree robbery and bail was set at $3,000 with a bail bondsman. The amount needed was $900. Browder's family could not raise this amount. Browder was jailed at the Robert N. Davereen Center. And I want to make it known that his prior arrest, he also claimed that he was innocent for that arrest too. Okay. Browder was jailed at the Robert N. Davereen Center on Rikers Island. Preet Bharara, the United States Attorney for the Southern District of New York, said that the RNDC had a deep-seated culture of violence in which inmates suffered broken jaws, broken orbital bones, broken noses, long bone fractures, and lacerations requiring stitches. Browder said inmates washed their own clothes with soap and a metal bucket, causing rust stains on the clothes. Browder's mother began visiting him weekly and provided him with clean clothes and snack money. To avoid becoming a target of the inmates, he slept on the top of his belongings, including his bucket. Browder said he felt pressure to gain physical strength and to defend himself from carceral violence. He said, quote, every here and there, I did a couple of pull-ups or push-ups. When I went in there, that's when I decided I wanted to get big. Browder was a victim of carceral violence. On one occasion, he and other inmates were lined up against the wall. Correction officers wanted to find the instigator of the fight. Browder and the inmates were punched one by one. He said their noses were leaking, their faces were bloody, their eyes were swollen. The guards threatened the inmates with solitary confinement if they reported their injuries. On December 10, 2010, a potential trial date was set after prosecution and defense had submitted notices of readiness. On January 28, 2011, 258 days after his arrest, Browder appeared in court. The prosecution requested a deferment of proceedings. On June 23, 2011, Browder's record showed the people not ready request 1 week. August 24, 2011, the people not ready request 1 day. November 4, 2011, the people not ready, prosecutor on trial request 2 weeks. And December 2, 2011, prosecutor on trial request January 3, 2012. On June 29, 2012, Browder's record showed the people not ready request 1 week, September 28, 2012. The people not ready request 2 weeks, November 2, 2012. The people not ready request 1 week, December 14, 2012. The people not ready request 1 week. After 961 days in Rikers, Browder had appeared before eight judges. He later opined, these guys are just playing with my case. March 13, 2013. Browder appeared before Bronx Judge Patricia Domingo. She offered Browder a plea bargain of immediate release for his admission of guilt on two misdemeanors with consideration of time already served. Browder refused the offer and was returned to Rikers. On May 29, 2013, Domingo freed Browder in anticipation of the dismissal of the charges against him 1 week hence. Bautista had returned to Mexico and could not give testimony against Browder. While incarcerated in 2010, Browder made his first suicide attempt. He tried a second time on February 8, 2012, trying to hang himself using strips of sheet tied to a ceiling light in the cell. Browder later said the COs goaded him to commit suicide. On another occasion, after an appearance before a judge, Browder made sharp implement from the bucket in his cell and started to slit his wrists. An officer intervened. After his release, Browder continued to have symptoms of depression, he said. People tell me because I have this case against the city, I'm all right, but I'm not all right. I'm messed up. I know that I might see some money from the case, but that's not going to help me mentally. I'm mentally scarred right now. That's how I feel. There are certain things that changed about me. They might not change back. Before I went to jail, I didn't know about a lot of stuff, and now that I'm aware and paranoid, I feel like I was robbed of my happiness. In November 2013, Browder made another suicide attempt and was admitted to the psychiatric ward of St. Barnabas Hospital, the first of three admissions to the ward. On June 6, 2015, at 12:15 p.m., Browder hanged himself from an air conditioning unit outside his bedroom window at his mother's home. His mother discovered his body. And that was the story of Anthony Browder. Sorry.
There's so many things about his story that are messed up. And so many things about his story that are not singular to him. And yeah, that sucks, man. The criminal justice system in this country being privately controlled and for profit is a really, really, really messed up thing that does not get the attention or outrage that it deserves. Because you're listening to that story of this kid accused of something, no evidence found to even suggest that he did it, and we're just going to throw him in jail anyway. And that decision being made by someone else, as he said, robbed him not just his happiness, but his innocence of thought, his blissful ignorance, if you will. And it is really sad that, again, that's not just his story. It's just the one that we told today.
What a trip, man. Our Way Black History Facts usually go way black, but way back. But this one was more recent, but it is definitely Black history. We will always remember his name among the ancestors. But that is going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. So once again, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
Yes, and I am Q Ward. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Go to our website, share our links with your friends, donate if you can. But if you can't, like I said, like, subscribe, comment. The engagement helps. Telling your friends about our show helps. Sharing what we're doing with people who are not following us, who are not tuned in, helps. So anything that you can do to support helps. This is a labor of love for us. We appreciate you guys. You know, CivicCypher.com, Civic Cypher on all social media. Ramses Ja on all social media. I am Q Ward, just on a couple of those social media things, because I can't really handle all of them. But we love and appreciate you guys, man. So you got anything else for the people, Ram?
No, man. I think you said it all.
All right. I guess that's it, y'all. See y'all next week. Peace.
Too. We can strike back hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander slash beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show, get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse and resist. Like this, like this, like this, like this.